All murders, the hardest to understand, come from a deranged mind.
People thought this was some sort of a Halloween prank.
A young woman goes on a shooting rampage in a shopping mall.
She had been working up to this day for a long time.
A nurse does the unthinkable and kills her patients.
Bobby Sue definitely had some deep-rooted psychological issues.
A mother, driven by despair, murders her own children.
She was going to inject them with potassium chloride, which stops the heart.
That's not thinking right, but that was her thinking.
When the brain snaps in a deadly woman, tragedy follows. The deadly power of a twisted mind is made shockingly clear on Wednesday, October 30, 1985. The day before Halloween, on the outskirts of Philadelphia, at the Springfield Mall.
People at first weren't sure what was going on. This was the day before Halloween, Mischief Night. So a number of people thought this was some sort of a Halloween prank. You know, someone in a costume who was pretending, you know, to be a killer.
But 25-year-old Sylvia Segrist isn't pretending. She's on a rampage.
It's the sort of crime that touches people right where their fears are. Could this happen to me while I'm out shopping? This one stood out because it occurred in a public place, and it was perpetrated by a woman.
Philadelphia Inquirer journalists Reed Cannelly and Russell Eshelman dissected the four deadly minutes when a crazed shooter let loose on Springfield Mall.
The scene that day was sort of a mixture. At first it was confusion, and then it was chaos.
A person dressed in fatigues jumped out of that car with a rifle and began shooting at people.
The first person that she took a shot at, she missed him.
Immediately after him was a woman standing at an automated teller machine. She was not hit.
Sylvia is firing a .22 caliber rifle from the hip.
Initially, witnesses thought they were looking at a male because of the way the person was dressed.
She's hardly aiming when she hits her first victim. Two-year-old Recife Cosman is hit in the chest.
The effect of a .22 caliber projectile on an infant's body would be devastating, particularly to the heart and the lungs. It's going to immediately perforate those organs and cause massive internal bleeding.
Recife would later die.
At the time, I was a young father and had young children. And so, you know, when I look back on that, thinking, you know, that could have been us, I mean, I think that's when it sort of hits you. Once she got into the mall, it was, again, more chaos. She just came in firing indiscriminately. They were diving behind racks of clothing. They were running into the rears of stores.
The shooter continued inside to fire bullets and struck seven more people.
As the horror of what's happening sinks in, some store owners realize the shooter is no stranger.
There were reports of her having shown up at the mall in days before the shooting and actually marching up and down in front of stores, in front of the doors.
She would go into the Springfield Mall, some clothing stores there, and she would complain to anyone who could hear her, how bright the colors were, and these bright colors bothered her. So she was just a bizarre character who had actually, I guess, scared a number of people on previous occasions.
Those who knew Sylvia Segrist knew she had an obsession with the military. Many also suspected Sylvia was mentally ill, something the Army had already discovered.
She had been discharged from the Army earlier that year. She had joined the Army, and apparently the Army had recognized that she was not right in her mind and had discharged her.
Apparently, several times she had to be escorted out of malls and places like that because of her behavior. She would be muttering to herself, and she'd be using obscenities.
For those who study the human mind, Sylvia's condition is well known.
Schizophrenia is a very serious mental condition characterized by the individual not being able to perceive reality as it really is. When a schizophrenic is talking to themselves, they're really responding to the voice in their head. The voices are generally not nice. They don't say, "You look pretty today." They may say, you're an evil person, and if you don't kill your neighbor, you're gonna go to hell.
Sylvia had been diagnosed with schizophrenia 10 years earlier. She suffered regular delusions, but often refused to take the medication needed to keep them at bay. Although her mother tried, she couldn't force her daughter to take medication.
Part of Sylvia's delusional system involved military power and control over people, and that she would be the one hurting other people rather than other people hurting her. When we look at her history, it could, I think, be foretold that she was going to commit some kind of violent act.
The time had come as Halloween approached.
She had been working up to this day for a long time.
Many people have schizophrenia, but they don't go on killing sprees. What set Sylvia off? And what would it take to stop her? At Springfield Mall, near Philadelphia, a diagnosed schizophrenic and military fanatic is randomly shooting customers with a .22 caliber rifle.
It appeared that she took no notice of any characteristics of people to decide whether they were going to be shot at or not. She just shot.
25-year-old Sylvia Segrist appears delusional. She is muttering, probably answering voices inside her head.
She was firing indiscriminately. She was firing oftentimes from her hip. She was not aiming the rifle, per se.
Sylvia's next victim is senior citizen Ernest Trout. He is shot 3 times and will die in hospital.
I don't think it was, you know, that she had been picking on senior citizens or anything at the time. I think that just happened to be people who got in the way of her bullets.
Sylvia is both out of control and perfectly in control. She is on a mission. But as she kills her next victim, 64-year-old Augusto Ferrara, the question in everyone's mind is, what is she trying to achieve? The answer would only be revealed when the shooting stopped. Sylvia was driven by a particular type of schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia.
Paranoid schizophrenia is a type of schizophrenia in which their delusions center around the fact that they are being persecuted, that people are after them.
Sylvia has been in and out of mental hospitals for years. And she fears her mother wants to send her back. She's also been refusing to take her medication.
They're very suspicious of medication. They're suspicious of anyone trying to get them to take medication.
She feared that her medication was hurting her. She feared that her family was out to get her and to hurt her and to send her back to a hospital.
So Sylvia's delusional rampage had a motive. It was also her ticket to a better life in prison.
She decided, for whatever reason, that the hospital was worse than prison, and that in her twisted state of mind, she would do something to go to prison instead of to the mental hospital.
Sylvia was finally stopped by the most extraordinary accident. 24-year-old grad student John LaFour mistook Sylvia for a prankster. She was getting on his nerves.
He just walked up to her while she was firing, took the gun from her. He had told her at the time, "You picked the wrong person to mess with." And it was only later he realized this was the real thing. This was somebody who was shooting real bullets.
John was an accidental hero, but his intervention was enough to break through Sylvia's delusion.
That was probably the first moment of reality she'd had in quite a while. What he was saying to her at the time brought focus on reality, even momentarily, and she was able to put the gun down and stop.
Sylvia Segrist is found guilty, but mentally ill, on 3 counts of murder and 7 attempted murders. She serves 3 life sentences.
She's not getting out. Pennsylvania makes it very difficult for people who are convicted of homicide to get out of prison in any kind of situation.
I could not help but feel some sympathy. I had an uncle who suffered from schizophrenia and paranoia. I felt that I understood the troubled mind that produced the sorts of actions that she did. Not excusing it at all. She suffered great remorse for it then, and perhaps even now.
Sylvia's insanity took 3 lives and shattered many others. Despite a history of mental illness, she was free to buy a gun.
Sylvia Segrist was able to purchase a weapon. When was asked if she had any history of mental illness, simply checked no on the form. Was able to purchase a .22 caliber semi-automatic rifle for $104. No problems whatsoever.
Even Sylvia herself criticized her ability to buy a weapon.
She wrote from prison to political leaders, to senators, then President Clinton, in letters sometimes describing what she had done and saying, "I shouldn't have been allowed to get this gun."
Criminal insanity turns our assumptions about human nature and human behavior upside down. It can even challenge our most basic instincts, as it did late one evening in Sherwood, Arkansas. Christina Riggs is tucking her children into bed. 2-year-old Shelby and 5-year-old Justin. But this touching scene is not what it seems. It is a crime that would send shockwaves around the country.
It was a horrible thing for people to have to think about. A mother's purpose is to protect her children, to take care of her children.
It's probably one of the most tragic cases I've ever been involved in because it was a murder that didn't have to happen.
Just 26 years old, single mom Christina is about to do the unthinkable. Extinguish her own flesh and blood. Two innocents who trust their mother with their lives. Something had snapped in Christina's mind, twisted it into breaking one of our strongest taboos.
A mother is supposed to protect her own children, and here she didn't, and it doesn't make sense.
Defense lawyer John Wesley Hall would have to try to make sense of this terrible double murder.
Two defenseless children that didn't know what was coming.
The night Christina took her children's life is etched in the minds of everyone connected to the case. The murders seemed all the more appalling because they were botched.
She was going to inject them with potassium chloride, which stops the heart. What she didn't understand was that it has to be given in diluted form through an IV. Otherwise, it burns up the skin and it will destroy the vein in the process. It won't go anywhere.
Journalist Kathy Fry covered the case for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
What the prosecution relied on was that she had horribly violated and not fulfilled the role that she was supposed to play in their lives.
Christina has sedated her children, but nothing will stop the pain.
As that undiluted potassium chloride shoots through the veins on the way to the heart, it binds and burns all of the blood vessel linings. She might have been trying to mimic the drugs that are used for lethal injection. However, she just didn't have enough knowledge, and in the end, really ended up causing an awful lot of pain.
So what brought Christina to that fateful night in 1997? By her own accounts, trouble had followed her for most of her life. Christina was separated from her siblings at an early age and raised alone by her mother. In her diary, Christina wrote of sexual abuse from a neighbor and a family member. By 13, she was desperately unhappy and became very overweight.
Part of it is a psychological barrier to the offender. If I make myself unattractive, no one will want to touch me, and that's what I want. I'll put this layer of protection over me so that my heart can never be hurt again by trusting the wrong person.
Christina's childhood abuse had another disturbing consequence. In her later teenage years, when it came time to find love, she turned to the only courtship she knew. Sex.
This is not unusual for women who were abused as young girls. That's what the abuser taught them. This is not a good foundation for a long-term relationship and raising children.
At 20, Christina got pregnant with her son, Justin. But as other lovers had done before, the father skipped town. Then came the man she would marry and a chance for happiness. She was pregnant when she married John Riggs, but on their wedding night, another blow, Christina miscarried. A year later, a glimmer of hope finally arrived in the form of daughter Shelby. But the marriage didn't last. Christina was alone again, this time a single mom. Each tragedy cut deeper into Christina's mind, a mind that already had seen far too much despair.
There was a cousin who had killed himself. Her own mother had tried to kill herself when Christina was a baby. And there was, a grandmother who eventually was committed to a mental institution.
But Christina's family past is about to be eclipsed by a crime that would turn all of Arkansas against her. In Sherwood, Arkansas, Christina Riggs has sedated her two young children, Shelby and Justin. She's preparing to kill them with an injection of toxic potassium chloride, often used in prison executions.
Generally speaking, when mothers kill their children, they don't poison them. Although I wouldn't say she was trying to poison them. I thought she was going to give them a quick and painless death.
5-year-old Justin is in agony because his mom miscalculates the concentration. Undiluted potassium chloride is just destroying her son's veins. Panicked, Christina reaches for another injection, morphine, hoping it eases the pain.
Unless the morphine is injected intravenously, it takes a period of time for it to work. I suspect that when he was in pain and in moving and wiggling about, there was no way she could get a needle into one of his veins.
The scene is unimaginable to those who know Christina as a caring mother and professional nurse.
Chrissy always wanted to help people. She was a nurse. She was always helping someone.
Elizabeth Nottingham knew Christina from two insightful perspectives. As her sister and as a counselor herself, she too needed to know what drove Christina to filicide, the killing of one's own children.
I was almost hoping to find that she wasn't a good parent. Then I could be mad at her. You know, I went through her house with a fine-tooth comb. All the chemicals were locked away. The food was in the refrigerator. Even pictures of their fathers was in their room above each of their beds. She was great with the kids.
Christina was so devoted, she worked long hours at Sherwood Heart Hospital to provide for her children. Raising kids with a full-time job was hard enough, but her long string of misfortune just kept coming. After her divorce, Christina started another relationship, but it would be a disaster.
The guy not just broke her heart, but like took her credit card. I mean, it's one thing to have someone dump you, it's another to have them rip you off and leave you destitute too.
Broke, with no prospect of paying her family's bills, Christina is spiraling into depression.
She told a doctor that she thought she might be depressed and was prescribed Prozac. She probably had suffered from it for quite some time.
At the time of the murders, it is unclear if Christina is taking her medication.
If an individual who is on Prozac stops, they can notice extreme mood changes, nervousness, irritability, and sometimes even recurrent depression.
So she had the perfect storm brewing. She had depression. She had all these personal failures. You know, people talk about having, you know, rainy days and Mondays. And in fact, Rainy Days and Mondays was the song, was the CD that was in her CD player.
At At 26 years old, an overburdened Christina Riggs snaps. Her plan to poison her two children has failed. So now, she resorts to suffocation.
When somebody smothers another, they usually put something soft, like a pillow or a fluffy blanket, over their face. The person dies as a result of lack of oxygen or asphyxia, and it causes brain damage. The brain swells, compresses those vital structures at the base of the brain, and we have death.
It was a horrible thing for people to have to think about a mother who would be able to hold a pillow over her children's faces and smother them. I don't think that people wanted to or were ready to address why she did it.
The young mom carefully lays her children's bodies on her bed and then tries to take her own life.
She then took 28 of the antidepressants. That was the rest of the bottle. She tried to inject herself with potassium chloride in her arm, and it burned a hole and collapsed the vein.
Far from being a calculating murderer, Christina had wanted to kill herself, but couldn't stand the thought of leaving her children alone.
The children, initially, she was not going to include in the suicide, but she decided 2 days before she did it that she was going to take them with her.
If she left the kids behind, she was afraid that the children would be separated, go to their fathers, for instance, and be split up.
She just thought there was no other way out, and she thought that no one else would take care of her kids, and that they would be better off. In her mind, she was saving them from future sadness.
Christina. But the tragedy doesn't end that night for Christina.
19 hours after the occurrence, her mom found her, and she was just barely alive.
Christina survives her suicide attempt and now faces community outrage.
Because she lived, she's demonized. If she had died, nobody would have looked into this. Nobody really would have cared to probe. It would just have been a horrifying thing that happened for whatever reason.
I just hope that out of all her misery and the sadness of our family, that we can shed some light on the causes of this for other people, and that they'll be able to maybe look at the symptoms and look at the situations and maybe intervene for someone else.
Christina is charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, which carries a death sentence in Arkansas.
We tried to show that she was acting under extreme emotional disturbance to justify either not imposing a death penalty or hopefully finding her guilty of second-degree murder.
But at her trial, many would discount Christina's state of mind. They believed it was a cruel, selfish act to free herself from motherhood.
I think what really got people the most was the testimony from the doctors saying that it would have taken 3 to 6 minutes to smother someone. That was what really horrified people the most.
They just wanted her to be evil. It was easier that way.
A jury finds Christina Riggs guilty. She is sentenced to death by lethal injection, the same thing she'd used to try and commit suicide.
Ultimately, it came right back down to what she'd attempted that night, potassium chloride was going to be the drug that killed her.
That was a cruel irony that they finished what she started almost exactly the same way, except she was strapped down to a table.
John Wesley Hall witnessed the execution.
And you could see her face, and it allows them to say their last words. The face changes color as the drugs take effect, and you turn gray. Skin turns gray. And it's rather shocking to watch it happen.
A woman's instinct to protect is one of the most powerful emotional forces we know. But for a mind twisted with depression and self-loathing, like Christina's, that power can turn deadly.
She was possessed with a black depression, and she did not want to leave her children in an unkind, cruel world to have a horrible life as she had it. That's the way she was thinking. That's not thinking right, but that was her thinking.
When the normal rules of thinking can't be followed, when human values are distorted by mental illness, the consequences can be devastating. Other victims are the innocent and the powerless. As they were in a small Florida nursing home. It's 3 a.m. in St. Petersburg during what nurses call the graveyard shift. But in the winter of 84, it will be the hour when patients will go to their graves.
In a 50-bed facility, a death of 12 people in 13 days. Wow, you know, what's going on here?
The first victim, an elderly resident who will have his twilight years cut short. His killer is the very person charged with his care. Nurse Bobby Sue Dudley.
Had she not been so prolific in such a short amount of time, she might have gotten away with this type of crime for months, if not years.
Criminal profiler Candace DeLong has studied many killers like Bobby Sue.
We call her type of serial killer angels of death, angels of mercy. They frequently are nurses, and they kill their patients.
But of all the angels, few are as deadly, as quick as Bobby Sue.
12 victims of murder in 13 days by one person in the same institution is horrible. It speaks to her intense compulsion and what each murder was doing for her.
Quite frankly, I think Bobby Sue probably could be termed as having deep-rooted psychological issues that surfaced after the investigation was begun.
This case would take Florida Chief Assistant State Attorney Bruce Bartlett on a journey through a twisted mind into the bizarre world of the serial killer.
She would starve for attention and would do things physically, mutilating herself if necessary to attract the attention that she desired.
Investigations show that before Bobby Sue started attacking patients, she was attacking herself.
Munchausen syndrome is a disorder in which the person makes themselves ill or injures themselves in order to get attention.
Investigators would uncover a long history of self-harm.
I think it would be safe to say that she had Munchausen syndrome.
Bobby Sue had her ovaries removed. There were stomach tumors, a broken arm that wouldn't heal, a hysterectomy, gallbladder problems, ulcers, pneumonia. Each illness brought her the attention she craved.
This isn't looking good at all.
Between surgeries, there were fainting spells.
Munchausen syndrome, it's called a factitious disorder. There are certain events that can happen in a child's life or an adult's life that can push them in the general direction that they will crave attention and will actually hurt themselves to get it.
Bobby Sue's mind may well have been twisted at an early age. Four of her siblings had muscular dystrophy, which needed constant therapy and attention from their parents.
If a child grows up in a family where a lot of her siblings are sick and they're getting all the attention from mom and dad, and the healthy child's gonna get left out. They're gonna get left behind.
Dad, I feel really sick.
Okay, I'll take her.
Possibly at a very young age, she accidentally learned that the way to get love and attention is to be sick.
It was becoming clear that Bobby Sue's entire life revolved around sickness. It filled her childhood. It brought her attention. It led her to a career in nursing.
She saw growing up what kind of power her mother had taking care of her sick siblings, and she wanted that. She wanted to be loved and needed and admired. And if she could get that by being a nurse, all the better.
But at some point, her desire for attention switched from harming herself. Now she wanted to harm others. In St. Petersburg, Florida, 1984, a frightening picture is emerging as police investigate an epidemic of nursing home deaths at the North Horizon Health Center.
They had all these deaths occurring, which was extremely out of the ordinary for that particular facility.
Basically what happened, you had several deaths in a short span of time.
Detectives Tom Rossi and Robert Engelkay would soon find a common link to 12 unexplained deaths in just 13 days.
Some of the deaths, quite a few of the deaths were occurring while Bobby Sue Dudley was working on her shift.
Their suspect, Nurse Bobby Sue Dudley, has a long history of harming herself to get attention.
You know, it has to be something going on more than what we're seeing on the surface here.
More troubling for the detectives was that Bobby Sue somehow managed to become a licensed nurse, despite a serious psychiatric history.
She received her nursing degree in 75. She's been in and out of institutions in Illinois for a 10-year period prior to even coming to Florida.
Circumstantial evidence implicates Bobby Sue, but the victims show no obvious signs of injury. There are only suspicions.
You do get this feeling, but you know, you can't convict or do anything just by a gut feeling, so you have to be able to substantiate what your gut feeling is.
14 clear.
Investigators start exhuming Bobby Sue's victims, hoping that their bodies will speak from the grave.
One of the bodies that came up had several injection sites, and there seemed to be some sort of a trace of like zinc or whatever, which would indicate the possible use of insulin.
Insulin, stored under lock and key at the nursing home, is used to stop diabetic patients becoming hypoglycemic. On her graveyard shifts, only Bobby Sue held the key.
Insulin overdose is also known as insulin shock. It causes a variety of symptoms, all of which can lead to death. If someone was given an insulin overdose, their blood sugars would very rapidly drop, and very rapidly this individual would lose consciousness. If they did not receive any sugar soon, this could go on and become irreversible brain damage and cause death.
Many of the bodies of Bobby Sue's victims yield evidence. But the most telling comes from sole survivor, 94-year-old Anna Larson. Although in a coma, her blood test reveals insulin.
Anna Larson was sent to the hospital with insulin shock, is what they diagnosed. She's not a diabetic, so that's, wow, you know.
It became evident that, you know, somebody had injected that insulin. And if you started looking at the staffing records as to who was attending, working that night, she kind of stood out.
After studying thousands of pages of nursing home records and exhuming 9 bodies, prosecutors were finally ready to charge Bobby Sue Dudley. It took more than a year and a half.
It was probably unfortunate for Bobby Sue Dudley that detectives Engelke and Rossi were assigned to investigate the case. They were very tenacious.
Some people said that we would never be able to prove that these were homicides, and then if we did, we'd never get a conviction. Well, we proved it, and we got a conviction.
Bobby Sue is imprisoned for 65 years after a plea bargain for second-degree murder. It was not the first-degree murder prosecutors planned, but it locked Bobby Sue away for the rest of her life. And that was important to investigators. Their evidence suggested there could have been even more victims further back in Bobby Sue's past.
I think everybody felt that there was more than the ones that were at North Horizon. This is a behavior that has been going on for a number of years. She had more than an opportunity at other facilities.
It would raise your suspicions as to maybe she was involved in more than what we could prove.
Bobby Sue had spent her life seeking the attention she never received as a child through sickness and injury. Then, at some point, her behavior changed and she began to injure others.
I think the best explanation as to Bobby Sue's behavior of killing all these people that she was caring for is, in this case, Munchausen by proxy, hurting someone else to get attention for yourself.
Bobby Sue would never live out her jail term. In what would be her final flirtation with illness, Bobby Sue died of infection in prison.
The fact that she died in prison, probably was fair justice for her.
It is argued these deadly women were not in control of themselves during their crimes. That, in a sense, they are victims too. Sylvia Segrist was escaping an internal torment that pitched her against her loving mother. Christina Riggs wanted to protect her children from a world she found too frightening. And Bobby Sue needed the attention she felt was denied in childhood. Each motivation is different, but tragically, the consequences were the same.
She would go into a health spa, for instance, to work out. She would wear these fatigues and she would lift weights. She wouldn't do any cardio, she would just lift weights. Sometimes she would just stare at herself in a mirror. I had the opportunity to interview Ruth Segrist, Sylvia's mother, after the incident. And she had been working for years on mental health issues because of the violent situations over the years prior to this involving her daughter.
Sylvia!
Ruth Segrist knew how violent Sylvia could become.
You've got to take your medicine. Sylvia, what are you doing? Sylvia! Oh.
Easily enraged, Sylvia had turned on her many times.
Sylvia, it's Bob!
But her mother had no legal right to force her daughter to take the drugs.
Stop it!
She was frustrated, frankly, being unable to change things about commitment and court-ordered forcing of people to take meds, things that she believed needed to happen.
But one question hangs over this tragedy. Given Sylvia's history of delusional behavior, could something have been done to prevent her rampage?
She's the kind of person who should have been perhaps institutionalized or somehow dealt with before this. Her minister had said after the shooting that he had recognized for several years that she needed help. It's easy to say that something should have happened, that people should have taken action to help her or to get her off the streets, but that was not legally possible at the time.
So here you have a single mom who's working full-time, who can't make ends meet. Because when you're working, you don't get those government assistance, like daycare assistance. You have to make it on your own. And then to kind of add to the debt part of her stress, she was started doing those payday loans, the loan sharks. So she would borrow $100 and have to pay back $120 or $125. And so that sort of began to escalate. You have all these responsibilities and there's so little relief. And so then when you couple that with a failure after failure after a failure, you know, there's something wrong with you, you can't balance your checkbook. There's something wrong with you, you can't find the right love interest. It was a couple of weeks before this happened. I remember thinking, she looks so tired. Tired is also a symptom of depression. Maybe if I had asked her a few more questions or, you know, hadn't been so superficial, that maybe, you know, sometimes just the slightest thing can alter the course.
There were in excess of 9,066 pieces or articles of evidence. Each piece of evidence was numbered, labeled, tagged, and placed into filing boxes.
Not yet.
And unquestionably, their hard work caused them to bring together evidence and ultimately have enough to charge Bobby Sue Dudley, whereas there are a lot of other individuals who probably would not have put the necessary time and just moved on to another case.
Get more deadly women online. www.investigationdiscovery.com.